All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Today, we have a really special guest. They're all special guests, but this person is actually one of our heroes. I want everybody to meet Charles Brand. You remember Charles from the docuseries, The Keepers, and we're going to get him to share his story again because I know some of you may have forgotten the details. Charles, welcome. We're really excited to have you with us.
Thank you, dear.
First thing I want to ask you about is going way back to grade school. Can you tell us how you came to meet Joseph Maskell?
I was an altar boy. Started at St. Clemens in 1958. We're going back a few years. In the fifth or sixth grade, you have the opportunity to become an altar boy. In the fifth grade, I decided I wanted to be an altar boy. In those days, you had to learn Latin. Mass was all in Latin. The first thing he had to do was learn the entire Mass in Latin. In fifth grade, I was having more time learning English. I became an altar boy. I became friends with Father Maskell probably in the summer of my seventh grade, going from seventh to eighth grade. Before that, I had been altar for 2 years. I had some very nice priests. Anybody knows St. Clemens, who's listening, especially the older folks, will remember Father Burns. He was the pastor. He was an old school, no nonsense pastor. That's who I learned to serve on the altar with. I learned with a priest named Father Young, very good person, who took me under his wing. As a side note, he later left the priesthood and got married. Back in those days, that was scandalous. But he was a great guy. So I was very comfortable around priests. Father Maskell came probably in the summer of seventh grade. At the time, St. Clemens was a thriving parish that had masses at 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning, 8 in the morning. So they needed altar boys. So there was a lot of altar boys. I first met Father Maskell when he came to St. Clemens. And I didn't take him for any different than any other priest that I had known. He became friends. They took an interest in me. And I can... looking back at it, I can now realize why he took an interest in me, but touch on that a little later on. I served I would have the 6 or 7 o'clock Mass in the morning. And in the summer, that meant I had to get to church. Most of the time, I rode my bicycle down to church. It was probably about a mile and a half, 2 miles away. That's where I first met Father Maskell.
Did your family belong to St. Clemens Parish?
My father and mother were very good people. My father was a construction worker. In fact, he was in the asbestos. And in those days, they called it the asbestos union. He was an insulator. And I call it insulation. I was born in Baltimore City. on Lemon Street, which is a street that runs perpendicular to Lombard and Pratt. We moved out into Lansdowne in 1958. Lansdowne in 58 was country. I was considered the country. And my folks wanted to get out of the city because it was not where they wanted to raise the kids. My father and mother were Catholic, but they weren't very religious. I wasn't forced to go to church on Sunday. My mother told me the difference between right and wrong. As far as Catholic school is concerned, my brother chose that. My brother, I have a brother who's 18 months older than me. And he was given the choice. Do you want to go to Catholic school or do you want to go to public school? And quite honestly, he figured Catholic schools had off more often in the holidays, and he chose Catholic schools. And that's how I got to St. Clement. I followed in his footsteps. He was 1 year ahead of me in school. So when I was in the fifth grade, he was in the sixth. When I was in the seventh, he was in the eighth. That's how we got to St. Clement. We were a good family. I had two stepbrothers, a stepsister, a full brother, myself, and my folks taught me the difference between right and wrong. They were good people. I had a good childhood.
You were serving at Mass three times a day, huh?
I was serving at Mass sometimes five, six times a week. But I certainly said, hey, my mother's right. My mother showed up the very first day I went on the altar. It was a big thing for her and my aunt. I begged her not to because I didn't know what I was doing the first time.
What are the responsibilities of an altar boy back in the 60s?
Well, to prepare for Mass. Anywhere from getting everything out on the altar that's supposed to be out on the altar, getting the candles lit, certainly being there on time, helping the priest with the Mass, including the give communion. And then in the end, you actually would shut down the altar. Yeah. It was there to assist the priest. You know, in those days, it was strictly boys. There was no girls allowed on the altar. Of course, that's changed. And I'm glad it's changed, but altar boy back in my day was a big deal. In the class, we probably had 100 kids in my class. Maybe 15 or 20 of them got to be on the altar. You were the assistant to the priest. If you needed anything, you were there for them.
There was some status attached to that then, huh?
A status. It was a pretty big deal in my school.
Did you tell me at one point you were in charge of the other altar boys?
That didn't happen until Maskell came aboard. October of my eighth grade. After spending all summer with Maskell, Father Maskell, I hesitate to call him Father Maskell. I know.
We don't call him Father either. Yeah.
But from here on out, we'll just call him Maskell.
Okay.
Works with me.
Yeah. Again, I'm not here to disrespect anyone, but it is what it is. He came to me one day and said, listen, I want to put you in charge of the altar boys, which I was over the top. Because up until then, a nun had been, in fact, her name was Sister Thomas Michael. And Sister Thomas Michael was the fifth grade teacher. And she was a no-nonsense teacher. When you found out you had Sister Thomas Michael for a year, well, you were in hell. That woman, she was tough. But she taught the altar boys back then. He turned that job over to me, which was pretty unbelievable, to be honest with you. Turned over to an eighth grader. I think Sister Thomas Michael liked it because she was doing that during her lunch hour. Work hard. This nun's worked hard. And I think she needed a 45-minute break, to be honest with you. And it was a very powerful position. In other words, I was in charge of who was going to be on the altar, who was not going to be on the altar. I had in charge of who was going to have 6 o'clock Mass, 7 o'clock Mass, 8 o'clock Mass. It was a very big deal. A very big deal, particularly for an eighth grader. Putting things in perspective, this back then has a lot of power. They may still have a lot of power. I don't know. But when a priest walked into that school, the nuns took notice. Whatever they said went. They were the boss. So not only did I have a power with my classmates and the seventh to sixth grade, I had a lot easier time with the nuns from there on out. So it was, I think I mentioned in the Keepers, I was the golden boy. I was the golden boy. The nuns did not go with me. And the underclassmen looked up to me. It was good. And by the way, I did a nice job. I handled that very well.
What was Maskell's title at St. Clement's?
I believe his title was associate pastor. I believe it was the second parish he was in. I think he replaced Father Young, to be honest with you. So I just told you.
I think you're right. I think you're right, Charles.
He left. And let me just say this. Father Young was a good man. And I don't know if he's still alive, but he was a good, decent person.
Were there other priests living there?
As far as I know, there was one other priest. I don't remember his name. And then there was Father Burns. I can tell you a story about Father Burns. By the time I got there, he was on his way out. He was an old guy but he was a serious priest. In the first grade teacher, he and my brother eat soup. We're using a little bit of profanity, I do believe. Miss Patricia was mean as a snake. My mother was a no-nonsense person. She found out Miss Patricia made him eat soup. She hit the fan. She didn't go down to Miss Patricia. She went down to Father Burns. She straightened that matter out pretty quick. That never happened again. By the time I rolled in, they knew who the France boys were. Let me preface all this by saying I haven't watched The Keepers all the way through. I really don't have a stomach for it. You know, it was strange times back then. Like the Catholic Church, just looking back at it, it was a mess back then. But being a 13-year-old, you don't realize that the Catholic Church was a mess.
What grades were in St. Clemens? Was it like a grade school?
There's no kindergarten. Back in my day, I never went to kindergarten. I keep telling people, I skipped two grades. I went right to the first grade. 1 to 8. In the 8th grade, you either went to a public high school, or in my case, I went to Mount St. Joe. Well, a lot of people went to Lansdowne High School. A lot of the girls went to Keogh. A lot of the girls went to Spalding. Back in those days, Spalding was just a girls' school.
Charles, I know that you were talking about how you suddenly became an altar boy, and things started looking pretty good for you in terms of altar boys being looked up to kind of in your school. When did things start to change with Mass School?
Now, let me just say this, because I've given this some thought. I was the youngest of five. My father was married before he met my mother. They had two older sons, and his wife passed away. My mother was married to a man who actually got bit by a snake on Iwo Jima and passed away. She had a daughter. Both were widows. They got together and had me and my brother. I was the youngest. I was very young when I became somewhat sexual because of my older brothers. Again, my brothers, I'm 65. They're 80. So I was what I thought was in bed with the next door neighbors. So I actually went to confession. And I happened to go to confession with Father Maskell. Because the Catholic Church had me believing it was a mortal sin to do that. Now, I've been giving this a lot of thought. That's what Father Maskell actually, I think he became interested in me. I used to think it was the blonde hair, blue eye, but it was more to it than that. He heard my confession. And the Catholic Church had me so wrapped up that a mortal sin to do what biology says to do when you're at that age, that biology kicks in. And that's where I really think he took a liking to me. But now that I think about it, even after Mass, sometimes she wanted to hear my confession. I'd say Mass with him. He said, "Do you have anything else you need to tell me?" Buddy, I had plenty of things to tell him, but I didn't. I kept that stuff to myself. But the Catholic Church had me loaded with guilt. I was very loaded with guilt, even at 13, because I had a lot of things that I thought I needed to feel guilty about. But in reality, there was no guilt there. It was just part of life.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
After I became head of the Office Boys, a couple of things took place. One, he started coming in my classroom at 12 o'clock, right after lunch, maybe 12:30, and pulling me out of class, taking me up to the rectory. In those days, the rectory was a separate house. It's not like it is now, attached to the church. New church was not yet built. So the rectory was a house, and I think it was on First Avenue. I may be wrong, but maybe Second Avenue, on Lansdowne, right up the street from the school. And he would pull me out of class for a couple hours at a time. First of all, it was once a week. He got to like three times a week. Greek said he needs to see you. He needs to see you. The nuns had nothing. Those nuns that were teaching me at the time were Sister Mary Paula, Sister Thomas Michael, Sister of Providence. And they were good people. I think they were very naive. I think they turned their head on things, but they were good people who were in it for the right reasons. I would go up into the rectory. At first, it was all about sports. We talked about sports. We talked. Maskell was the chaplain for the Baltimore County Police. He was a chaplain for the state police. He was a chaplain for the Maryland Air National Guard. He was either on his way to getting a master's degree in psychology at Hopkins, or maybe already had it. Back in those days, that was a big deal. People didn't get master's degrees back in 67. No, people barely got high school education back then. But it quickly turned to, we'd go up there and spend hours talking about sex. That's where I learned to drink. He started having wine when I got up there. First time I drank wine. Believe me, up until then, I never drank. I didn't do anything. I was big into sports. I drank quite a bit of wine out of a chalice. They said it was left over from a mass. They needed to finish. After a while, when I got up there, it was always a glass of wine. The coffee cup. Always in the coffee cup. The other thing that's interesting was that you always have a soda there that opened. It started with Coke. I told them I don't drink Coke. There was always a Pepsi up there, too. And that was always opened. You can take that for what it's worth. This went on for a good while. And that's where, actually, things started getting a little kinky. Particularly after the wine. And I know in the keepers, I never really touched on what took place in that rectory. Maskell got off on masturbating. He liked to masturbate, particularly in front of kids, the little boys. And he did that fairly often. And the guys are showing me how you masturbate. He checked out my penis, see if it was circumcised. Even at 13, I didn't really understand the circumcised, uncircumcised routine. It was always about sex, always involving wine. And many times I left there. In fact, sometimes he drove me home. I'd leave there and go right to the school bus. Teaching the altar boys, he knew that I was, at lunchtime, I'd have a group of maybe 15 kids that I was teaching how to be altar boy. What the hell? There was wine in the rectory. At that point, I started drinking the wine out of the rectory. And I noticed that he would keep it filled. He said the wine was never filled in the rectory refrigerator. But looking back at it, I know why he did that now. Because he would come down and realize how much I drank during recess. That I knew what was coming up. So I was, a lot of times after recess, I'd have a pretty good amount of altar wine in me before I'd even go up to see Maskell. And we did a lot of things together. He'd take me shooting over at the Avenue Police Station. Where he taught police officers range. But it was outside. Again, don't quote me on that. But there was a shooting range that he used to take me to quite often. I felt uncomfortable with the whole situation. And I made a mistake. Well, I didn't make a mistake. I told my friends, you got to watch out for this guy. He is not right. And he likes little boys. And that got back to him. That's when things started to sour. And that was probably in April of 1967. Things got real ugly real quick when he found out I was talking about him. Because I didn't want what was happening to me happen to my friends. Evidently, one of my classmates told him. They came in one day to my class and grabbed me by my hair, pulled me out of my chair. This was in front of the nun, by the way. This is Mary Paul. In no certain terms, he said, "Get your fucking little ass up to the rectory. I will talk to you." And that's how we talk to each other. I was 13 years old. I look at 13-year-olds. I look at eighth graders now, and sometimes, particularly when my kids were in the eighth grade, and I would think to myself, that's how old I was when this happened to me. And they were kids. These kids, they were kids. And I'm up talking to a priest. Fuck this, fuck that. That's the way he was talking to me, telling me stories about how he would, him, Baltimore County police officers would go out on ride-throughs and catch the people making out and pull them out of the car and embarrass the girl and wouldn't put their pants on. The stories were just off the cuff. That's when the relationship, in fact, I quoted in the Keepers. He basically told me, and that's probably in late April of 67. Listen, you little motherfucker. If I hear one more person come back and say you're talking about me, I'm going to make sure you don't graduate. And that is when I realized I had a problem. Up until then, my parents didn't know anything about it. They just thought I was a priest that was taking interest in me. And he would call my house quite often. My mother once told me, she said, I knew something was up, because when he would call, I would say, tell him I'm not home. I'm not home. And that's when the real shit really started. And I tell people, sexual abuse was one thing. 4 years, he stalked me. I mean, from mine graduating from the eighth grade until graduating from Mount St. Joe, that was probably four of the toughest years of my life. And he made it extremely tough because he had a lot of power in that community. And that community believed him. The St. Clement, she was, whatever he said was, they believed him. At least until they found out what was really going on, including my future father-in-law, because he knew I liked this girl in my class, who later became my wife. And he was very good friends with the father, so he made it very difficult for me. Very difficult. Well, we damn near got into a fight. I don't think we got into a fight. It was over at Keogh parking lot with me and my future father-in-law. But she did not want me around the daughter. And it was fun basketball did all that. And I was right in the parking lot at 7:30 in the morning at Keogh parking lot. And again, I was probably a sophomore, junior in high school. It was pretty ugly.
You said the argument was with Maskell or with your future father-in-law?
It was with my father-in-law. It was with my father-in-law. But Maskell caused it by lying about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my father-in-law did not want me around his daughter here at the end. And he didn't know anything about me. He didn't know anything about me, only what Father Maskell told him. A little bit of a pickle here. I wanted to graduate. So I had to go home and tell my mother. That was in 67. My father never did find out. But I went home and told my mother. And I didn't tell her everything. I told her enough for her to get her attention. And that's when my mother went down. That's when my mother got involved with the Catholic Church, with George Diocese of Baltimore. She was not going to let that crap happen. I still say to this day, that's why Maskell got transferred out. I know that's why Maskell got transferred out of St. Clemens in 67 to Keogh. Because my mother went down there in April, May of 67. And you did not want to fool with my mother. But believe me, you did not want to fool with my mother. My father would have killed him, by the way. That's why my mother never told my father. And she went down with another lady. You know, I won't mention her name. Because again, she has since passed. But her kids are still alive. Her kids are good. Or my best friend. Her sons were my best friends. Neither one of them drove. So they took the transit bus down. They didn't make a phone call. They went down there. I knew that for a fact. Because I later went back and asked the lady that went with my mother. This was in the 90s when she was still alive. My mother had since passed. He told me exactly how it went down. I did that during the Mahouli incident. Just to make sure what I was saying to Mahouli was correct. If I say something and I'm not sure of it, I'm not sure of it. I just went back to verify my facts. From then on, basketball stalked me for the next 4 years. He made my life very difficult. I was kicked out of the baseball team. I was kicked out of CYO. I wasn't allowed near the parish. And my mother first tried to talk to the Father Calliope, the pastor. And he was he just couldn't do anything about it. That's what he said. You know, he was very sorry for all of it. He didn't have any control over it. I was home one day, and I got a phone call. And my mother answered the phone. And I went to the phone, and he said, "Charles, I just want to tell you, Father Maskell has been transferred. And you are back in, you're back on the baseball team. You're back in CYO. You're welcome back to the parish." I remember that. He called me at my house to tell me that. The problem was Maskell wasn't transferred to Keough. He was transferred to Keough, but he still came back to St. Clemens. Wait, so from 5 o'clock on, he was still back at St. Clemens.
His day job changed.
It was a day job. It was a day job. Mm-hmm. He got him out of there for the day, and he was still around to. I do the CYO. Many times he kicked me out of CYO dancing. You know, find a reason. My pants were too tight. I was looking out the door. If you walked outside for a second, now you're gone. Hell, he was even. Oh, I remember a time we got new uniforms for baseball. And he must have had a field day because we had to try the uniforms on, put them on before the game. We got there an hour early, and I was in new uniforms. Everybody had to undress. Somehow Maskell got in there. If he was not involved with the baseball team, a gentleman named Mr. Gill. Now, I took my pants off, put my baseball pants on, and he saw that I didn't have a supporter. Back in those days, I didn't wear boxers. I wore, or what do you call it, tidy whities. I don't know. And he told me that if I didn't have a supporter, I wasn't allowed to play. Well, I never wore a supporter. He said, "I got a jock strap up in my rectory. Go get it. Put it on there. You're not going to be able to play." I knew what he wanted. I knew exactly what was going on that day. So he gives me a key to the rectory. I run on up to the rectory. That supporter was right where he said it was going to be. Real quick, pull my pants down, put the supporter on. By the time I got my supporter on, who do you think that they in the rectory? Please, I missed the show because I've already put the supporter on. Mm-hmm. But I knew what was going. I knew what was going on. So he still had a lot of power. I'd go to Our Lady of Victory, and I know he was well liked over Lady of Victory. I don't know if he's still well liked over there, but he'd show up there. He'd kick me out of CYO over there. He just felt one time he did an entire sermon about me in Sunday Mass. A bad kid.
He named you?
Oh, he named me.
Yeah, at Mass?
At Mass. At Sunday Mass. So, probably 11 o'clock Mass. Oh, St. Clemens. St. Clemens Lansdowne. Let me just say this. All those people that were there, they later became patients of mine. They later became patients. But it finally came out, and it came out. It took a while, but it came out. So I had 4 rough years. My high school years weren't very productive because I had a lot of things going on in my life. A lot to deal with the Catholic Church and a lot to have to deal with Maskell. I graduated bottom fifth of my high school class. I had a very bad 4-year run at Mount St. Joe. And to this day, I regret that. To this day, I regret. He blew 4 of my best years. But again, I was a kid. You know, I was 13 years old. That was probably worse than the bullshit that happened up in the rectory, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. That to me had more of an effect because he had an effect on people that my friends' parents, like I never got invited to parties that friends had because I was bad. Those kids didn't know me. Their parents didn't know me. But they knew what he said about me. Father Maskell was the type of person. Father Maskell didn't care if it was a little boy, little girl, an adult man, an adult woman. Hell, man, you could have sent Father Maskell to a farm. He were fornicated with the sheep. He was just a very, very sick person. He was sick, and as he got older, he got sicker. He just got sicker. He got meaner. He was a very ugly guy to deal with, and he was intimidating. Particularly to a 13, 14, 15-year-old. He was intimidating. And when he knew he intimidated you, that's when he had you.
Charles, when did you first start to realize that people were being abused at Keough.
That's a good question. Hey, let me tell you something. Those people were abused at Lansdowne, St. Clements, along with me, that I later found out. I've had lunch with one or two, and I won't mention names. I never knew any of this. I thought it was me. I thought it was just me. I didn't realize the extent of his abuse that was going on at Keough, even after Sachetta died. I never put the connection together. And I can remember when it happened. My wife graduated from Keough in 71. I didn't realize crap was going on until 1971, when my wife came out and told my girlfriend at the time, came out and told me that Father Maskell had called her into his office to talk with her, that he saw me and my girlfriend in the backseat of my car, bare-ass naked, fucking. That was his quote. That's not my quote. That never happened. I love that woman. I have way more respect than to do that. That never happened. So we knew it was a lie. But he kept her there 6 hours. He was in that office 6 hours. And even after that, I never realized that he had done it to other girls and got away with it. And that was in March. That was in March 71. I know that for a fact. And by then, me and Master, we were having a running gun battle as far as me trying to keep the heat off my back from the shit that he was starting, either with Pat in Paris, with my future father-in-law, with my friend's parents. So I never really realized what was going on. But she came out crying that day. And I picked her up from school. I would pick her up from school, take her home, because her house is only... It's been a ride from Keough. She lives on Hammond Ferry Road. And I said, what's going on? And she explained to me what happened. That's when I had enough. I was no longer 13 years old. I was 18 years old. I had enough of him, what he was doing with me. But now he's starting with my girlfriend. And that's when, that night, things between me and Maskell came to a head. But up till then, I never knew what he was doing with these girls. I had no idea. My mom would be turning in her grave. My mother would be turning in her grave if she knew about that. Because one thing that I do hope for, the city of Baltimore was very complicit in all of this, as far as hiding all this bull crap. Even in the 90s, that trial in the 90s was a joke. And Jane Roe, let me say, I didn't know who Jane Roe was then. Didn't know who Jane Doe was. I didn't know these girls. I didn't know what that was all about, but that whole thing was a sham. That was a joke. That was a done deal before it even, a judge ought to be ashamed of himself. It's simple. What I hope for is that they do get the records. Because, you know, that's going to tell a lot. These people knew what was going on. They tried to hide. Hell, half of them were doing it. It wasn't just Maskell. The whole community, there was a community of priests that were just, it was sick. It was just a sick community of priests. And in my heart, it didn't happen in the 60s. It goes back to the 50s. It didn't wake up one day in the 50s, all this started happening. This crap goes back to the 50s, to the 40s. I don't know that for a fact, but I would speculate. It's going on for a long, long time. It's going on for a long time. And it got to a point where people became aware of it, more aware of it. So you know, I didn't know about that until the 90s. That's another story.
Can you tell us what happened when you went? You said things came to a head with you and Maskell. Can you go ahead and tell us what happened at night?
I was intoxicated the whole month of March, my senior year of Mount St. Joe. I was drunk the whole month of March. And I say that, I was working 29 hours a week as a meat cutter, A&P. I was going to school, and I was intoxicated. You know, so that's the only way I could deal with life. I was drunk the whole month. And I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of. And I wish I could do it over. I wish I could do it over. Like I say, It was 4 years. I wish I could get back. He came out. She was crying. And I said, what happened? And she tells me a story about what I just said. The bastard got her in his psychology office. Nowadays, if you have a master's degree in psychology, you're not a psychologist. You got a master's degree in psychology, period. But in those days, you thought it was Sigmund Freud. And for 6 hours, she interrogated. I just had enough. So that evening, me and a friend of mine, he's not supposed to be a big guy. And I knew this was going to get ugly there. But I was getting ugly. I don't want to mention his name. He was one of the two. So my friend, he hears that he knows. He'll remember. He'll know who it is. We went down to the rectory. I drove to the rectory. I was intoxicated, I'll tell you. I went to the back of my car. I got a baseball bat out. I knocked on the rectory door. And Father Fields came to the... Now the rectory is attached to the church. It's not the... This is where it is now. The rectory's still there. And so I'm here. I always see Father Master. And he asked me why. 15 minutes, I explained why. So they knew what was going on. They knew what was going on beforehand. And so I'm going to kill a motherfucker. I've had it. I am done. I ain't 13 years old no more. I'm 18. And to be honest with you, I really felt like I could kick his ass. But let me say, I did bring a friend along, just in case. I was covering my base, because Maxwell's a big guy. And we went around for about 35 minutes. They wouldn't let me in. And Maxwell looked out the window. He wouldn't come out, but he looked up at the window. And I looked down to see what was going on. Because it got pretty loud. And it got pretty ugly. And it went on for about 35 minutes. This is in March of 71. When you tell me that the Catholic Church wasn't aware of what was going on, once again, they are liars. Because in no way did that not get back to the church. You'd have to be an imbecile to believe that incident did not get back to the church, to the Archdiocese. I'm telling you, the only thing that didn't come was the police that night. Because I was going to tear through that door. In any event, I never did get the baseball bat on Maxwell's head. But when he was at the window, I walked over the window. I got a pretty foul mouth. And I don't know if you can hear him listen to the podcast. But I told him, I said, listen, motherfucker, if I ever hear you talking about me, or if you ever talk to my girlfriend, I'm not going to knock on this door. I'm coming through this door. I'm going to knock your fucking head off your shoulder. And from that day on, Maxwell left me alone. I never got my hands on him, but he knew I was serious. I later talked to Father Colby about it. I talked to Father Colby when I got through dental school. He was patient. And I asked him about that over 500 West University Parkway, my first dental practice. He apologized. Leave the diff. He knew what was going on, and they did the same thing with Father Gerard. He said, Charlie, I was a 50-some-year-old priest, and that went down. And the Catholic Church, the Archdiocese, told me that if I spoke up, I would lose my pension. That's how they get you. The Catholic Church gets these priests with pensions. They did it with Steve Gerard. Yeah, that's a fact. I'm telling you, he told me that right over. Yeah, I am so sorry that I let you down. It can't, that I had no other job skill. I was 55 years old. If I lost that job and to him it was a job, I'd have nothing to fall back on. And he threatened to take my pension away if I spoke up. Now, Father Fields is probably still alive. Father Tullock died. Father Fields is probably still alive. And I'll say this for Father Fields. If he's any kind of man, he would tell you the truth. That's up to him. I never had a problem with Father Fields. He seemed like a beautiful person, good guy. And his brother happened to be a monk over at Mount St. Joe. George Fields taught me math and geometry and algebra. Colby apologized for what, and they knew it. He knew what was going on. When I had to go up to the rectory in the eighth grade, in order to get upstairs to that room of Maxwell's, I had to walk right past Colby's desk. A lot of times he was at that desk. I walked right past that desk many times in here. They knew what was going on. It really twists you up a little bit when you start thinking about what these guys get away with. Look at what they're dealing with little boys and little girls. Some of them were girls. I later found out some of these people that he dealt with at St. Clemens were young girls that he twisted up. But I don't have the answer. I don't know. But I do know that he apologized.
There's one question that a lot of people keep asking. So I'm going to ask you so we can get the answer straight from you. Okay?
Sure.
Okay. In the 90s, when the Doe Roe case was in the newspapers, Father Mullooly visited you. You were not part of that case.
Right. I was not part of it. They threw it out.
Okay. So why would Mullooly, at the very same time, make the overture to ask for a meeting with you? We know that the church has said it was for comfort and support. Yeah, you weren't even involved in the Doe Roe.
Stop right there. Stop right there. The Archdiocese knew that there was a little boy at St. Clemens that Maskell had did what Maskell does, and that his mother went down to the Archdiocese. That was a fact. Okay, they knew that. Okay, now they got a problem. Because Jane Doe, and I didn't know Jane Doe, I didn't know Jane Roe at the time. I was practicing dentistry. In fact, I was in my Lansdowne office. They wanted to get to me before the plaintiff lawyers got to me. Okay, so there was a rush. I had a patient, and I do not remember her name, but she was a sweetheart of a patient. She was separated from her husband or divorced. I treated her and the child. She's probably in her late 30s. Pretty much the same age as me, and she was a nice person. And one day I'm treating her, and she says, "Hey, you know, the Archdiocese of Baltimore is trying to get a hold of you." I said, "What?" He said, "The Archdiocese of Baltimore is trying to get a hold of you." He said, "They knew there was a little boy at St. Clemens, Father Maskell had abused, and his mother went down." She told me the whole story. Now I don't know if she worked for her, but I don't even know who she worked for. I said, "Well, what?" And now there's a lawsuit involving two Keogh girls who said they were abused by Father Maskell. At the first I heard of it. I said, "Hell, they only get a hold of me. Tell them to call me. I'm not calling them because I really don't give a shit." And I meant that. I did care about the women. Don't get me wrong. But I really didn't give a crap what the heart died in Baltimore wanted or didn't want. They want to talk to me, call my secretary. And that's what they did. Yeah, I didn't know who it was, but they called my secretary and they arranged to a meeting. It was 8 o'clock at night at my Cadenceville office. And I didn't know who he was. We met 8 o'clock at my Cadenceville office after work. Me and my wife was there. In fact, one of the dental assistants was probably still there cleaning up in the back. Okay, and she's still alive, Marie. Three people came. I don't know where Mahuli. I have nothing against Mahuli. Mahuli didn't do anything to me. And Mahuli is a businessman in a organization called Religion. Okay, the Catholic Church is a business. Okay, it's in the business of salvation. But he is a businessman. And that's how I looked at it. He is trying to put out a fire that is occurring here. That's how I looked at it. I didn't look at him. There was no, "Let's pray, get off, you counselor." And he knows what he said, and I know what he said. He opened up the meeting with Archbishop, I believe, Keeler at the time. Do I have that right, Archbishop Keeler?
Yes.
This is so important, Charlie, that if Archbishop Keeler wasn't over in Rome becoming a cardinal, he would be here right now. That's how we opened that conversation. Because what's going on? And then we won on, he said, "We know that Maskell and your mother," he told me that. "So I don't want to hear the bullshit that they weren't aware of it. Can you tell us the story?" Now with that, at the time, it was three priests, three people. Father Mahuli, Marmassian Mahuli, whatever. Again, I have nothing against this guy. I'm just telling you fact. Now I thought he introduced the other two as canon lawyers. And if I'm wrong about that, I apologize, because they didn't really have too much to say. I seem to remember he sat down, they stood up. I'm later told one of them was the vicar. We spent 2 hours, 2.5 hours talking about what went on. Here's what we're doing right now. This is between me and Masculine and Denise. And it's funny, Gemma. This is a maybe 93, 94, maybe, I don't know. Maybe 92, I don't know. But I thought these girls were suing for $40,000. I said, they have a $40 million lawsuit against us. And I can remember saying, holy shit, $40 million? A lot of money back in 94. What the hell did basketball do to these girls? Because I still did not know. You know what I mean? And he explained it to me. And as sure as I'm standing here, I said, listen, here's what I would suggest. Just do the right thing. This is not going to go away. He later got shipped up to Delaware to do the same thing, I think. Put out the Delaware fire. Huh? They were creeping up everywhere. It was a forest fire. And they were spraying up everywhere. And Father Mahouli, Monsignor Mahouli, but I think he was the man to go to put out sexual lawsuits.
Charles, is there any last words of wisdom or anything else you want to say?
Kathy Sheriff has a problem on her hands right now. Again, it's not a bushfire. We got an out-of-control forest fire here going, and it's cropping up state by state. I'll be interested to see how it ends. And I'm really concerned about the people that were affected by it.
Mm-hmm. We want to thank you for your courage. I know this isn't easy. And I just want you to know that you're one of my personal heroes. We all love and care for you, okay?
I appreciate it.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.